BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season. Everything from pro and college basketball to UFC, MMA, and more. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. With live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable, BetOnline is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. Head to betonline.ag today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEVE to receive your rewards. betonline.ag, where the game starts. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Believe in OK State podcast. I am Megan Robinson, joined once again by Eva Toba, and welcome back, new dad times two, Justin Southwell.
Hey. Times two.
Good to be back.
How's it feel knowing you have a future five-star quarterback that's going to be going to Oklahoma State?
Man, I'm telling you, the first thing I noticed when he came out were those arms. All right. Yeah. He wasn't playing around. He's got some guns on him, and we're going to start training immediately. So he's doing tummy time right now. I'm expecting him to do at least 5 push-ups by the end of next week. So we'll see how it goes.
No time to waste, baby. Come on. Bear crawls, push-ups, all that. We need to get going. All right. Coach Gundy's, it ain't going to be Coach Gundy by then. Yeah. Ooh, let's see. J.W. Walsh needs to get the quarterback ready.
That's right. Yeah. What was it? You guys said it was like a class of 2045, right? So 100 years after the first national championship, maybe we'll bring another one home.
Come on.
I hope we win one before then, but obviously I want my son to be able to lead the Cowboys to another national championship.
I would love that. Let's go. Landon Southwell, take us there, baby.
What's his middle name?
Westcott. It's a combination of my dad's name and Sheridan's dad's name.
Wait, I love that. That's really cool.
I thought it was after Dak Prescott, but yeah, that's
not I like quite. Not quite. No offense, Dak, but you know, you don't have that place in my heart, you know?
I love it.
Did you guys agree on Westcott together? Because that's really cool. I really like that.
Yeah, we did. We almost used it for Camden, and it just didn't flow to me. I just thought Camden Westcott, it sounded a little bit too, I don't know, like he was from the UK or something. And I was going to say, yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't need all that. So we went with Luke. Because Camden Luke just kind of flows a little bit better.
It does flow.
And Westcott, we were just thinking if we have another boy, we've got another middle name in the chamber ready to go.
I love it.
Well, it was Orange Power Weekend this past weekend. And I mean, from what I saw, again, I was not in town for it, but it looked like the Pioneer Woman was there. Justin Blackman came back into town. Looked like a pretty great weekend for fans. Unfortunately, now that is wrapped up and spring ball is closed out, it means it's transfer portal season again. Ugh. And we're already taking hits, guys. Whew. Yeah, not great. But starting offensive tackle Caleb Etienne entered the portal a couple days ago. And within 72 hours of announcing he was entering the transfer portal, he has already announced his commitment to BYU.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, you talk about taking a hit. I don't know about that one. I was like, look, if somebody went into spring ball and they earned that starting spot over him, then good for that individual that went in. I think in a situation like this where you enter the transfer portal and 3 days after you're already announcing where you're going, you probably kind of already knew were in talks with somebody going into, you know, this whole transfer portal period opening up. But you know, if you just aren't getting the burn, if you ain't getting no play during spring ball and somebody came in and took that spot from you, I'm not mad about it. I'm not mad about it because the left side of our offensive line was definitely one of our weak spots on offense last year. All right. So, yeah, hopefully whoever it is that took that spot is going to be a much needed improvement.
But Etienne?
I've heard of Etienne.
Okay.
Mostly. And I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation. That's just how I've heard it.
Well, he started every game last season, and I know that the offensive line struggled a little bit, but they're having someone with so much experience is helpful, especially when our offensive line was one of the younger position groups last season. So maybe someone did outwork him, but it's also just kind of my bigger question is, are we about to go down another transfer portal frenzy where he's the first of several chips to fall?
I don't think so, but I was going to say, I think he actually graded out as one of the worst left tackles according to PFF last year. So
good riddance.
Was that in the Big 12 or what?
Just Division I football, period. Gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, that experience is obviously good to have, but if you're not great, then you know, there's a give and take there. Now, what I will say though is, like, I would love to I would have loved
Dad
to
brain.
See him stay, because we don't know what the depth situation is going to look like. If it's similar to last year and all of our guys are getting hurt on the offensive line, you want to be able to have a guy that knows the offense and can step in seamlessly and take over. So I think it's a little bit, you know, I don't know if I want to call it selfish, but it is. It's kind of selfish. You know, you're bailing on your team during the spring transfer portal, whenever you could have done it in the fall or the winter, whatever you want to call it. So I don't love that aspect of it. I don't love that he's going to be in conference again. But to answer your question, Meg, I think probably not as far as seeing a wave like we saw before. I think that that kind of, you know, they got it out of their system. The people that want to be here do want to be here. And I think that for Etienne, it's kind of like, I'll be here if I'm the starter. If not, I'm going to go somewhere else.
Yeah, man, if we were to go down another spiral of these, that would definitely mean that the culture is out of control. But things seem to be reined back in some. So I don't anticipate a whole bunch of people trying to enter the transfer portal. And good luck to ATN wherever he goes. I don't know him at all, but I will say, y'all remember those groups? In the group chats. All right. In the group chats, I used to complain a lot. And I don't even like to complain.
I say, you complain, do you?
Yeah, I mean, look, if somebody drives me to complain, you know it's a big freaking deal. So whoever is coming into that spot, hey, let's get it together. Let's get it done. And I would say Etienne was a much better run blocker than he was a pass defender, right? Like, I think that makes a difference whenever you're going into a season to where you're going to have a quarterback who is not running as much, of course, you know, probably not as athletic as a Spencer Sanders was. And it's probably going to be more in the pocket, letting that arm show off. So, yeah, if this person is good as pass block, come on, let's get it done.
That's a good call.
Didn't you guys say, though, that in, like, spring ball, positions aren't really won or lost? It's kind of just, you know, getting back to it, going through – not that you can't earn your position, but, I mean, it's spring ball. We still have – summer camp to get through. And if he did potentially lose his position, I don't know. I can't say, that's pure speculation. Wouldn't he have the opportunity to earn that back in the summer before the season actually gets going?
You got the staff that's in here right now. You got what seems to be a make or break type of season for the offensive staff. Who cares what you did last year? It don't seem like they're messing around, you know? I think what you're referencing, Meg, is us talking about, you know, you can't be too, you know, you can't take your foot off the gas after spring ball ends because there's still a crop of people coming in the summer.
Right, exactly.
You know, with that being said, you can absolutely get your spot taken in spring ball.
Right, but I'm saying there's also another chance you have spring or fall camp to work hard and earn it back.
Hey, some people don't want to fight. Some people ain't trying to battle.
But who's to say you're going to be the starter at BYU?
Right. He might not be. That's the thing. You're going to transfer, and it's not a guarantee that you're going to be a starter there. Is it worth it rolling the dice? I don't know.
We play BYU at home this year. Is that right?
It is our season finale, November 25th.
Okay. The ATN welcome home game is what we're going to be calling that.
Will it be a welcome home game, or will it be a big –
I guarantee you, like, there's going to be like a handful of diehards that might care, and everybody else won't even know, like, that the guy was even transferred at the, you know, people don't even know that he transfer to BYU. They'll forget about it by the end of the year, as long as our left tackle stays healthy.
Hey, best of luck to him. Best of luck to him.
The last thing I'll say about Etienne is, like, I don't understand why you'd want to transfer to BYU. You're going from Stillwater, which is like college town of college towns, you know, the strip, partying, to signing a contract that you will not drink, you will not do all of these things. Is that football team that good that you want to sacrifice your social life? But I mean, to each their own.
Well, I will say I've met several people who have attended BYU. Football players. And I do think that, you know, to their credit, it takes a certain type of individual to want to go to that type of school who, you know, you have a certain seriousness about you. And, you know, the fact that Caleb Etienne is transferring to that school, I think kind of shows where his head is at. I'm not here to mess around. I don't care about the strip. I don't care about the party. I'm here to make sure that I give myself a best opportunity. Hopefully, you know, that's what he's thinking. But everybody that I've ever met that has gone to BYU, I'm telling you, they've got their head on straight. So, hey, salute to him.
Yeah, no, I get that. And BYU has very good athletics, so I'm not knocking that. It's more of having a taste of like a normal college environment and then going to that. And I'm not even talking about the partying. There's just like so many things, so many restrictions.
Yeah.
That I personally find ridiculous that are beyond going out and partying.
But was he going to be a senior?
I believe so.
Because I just feel like, you know, a lot of times what I've seen is people will have that experience and then they realize it's like, all right, a little bit more hyped up than it needs to be. I'm over it now. I can like kind of go on, move on kind
of
thing.
Yeah. One of those things, like once you get it out of your system, you just kind of like, yeah, whatever. Although I will say I have one huge regret in college. Okay. This was the 2012 season. We had just lost to the University of Texas at home. This was the JW quarterback sneak. It was like 1 inch short of the goal line. Really, he crossed the goal line whenever you go back and look at the replay, but they didn't give it to us. We ended up losing the game. I don't know if y'all remember that. It ended up ranking as the 25th loudest game in college football history. We actually showed up on the Rector scale during that game. I don't know if y'all remember that. That was 2012, and I remember just being so mad that we lost to Texas. I went home and just, yeah, got my little Subway sandwich that they gave to us and just, you know, I just wanted to go to bed. Well, if y'all remember the movie Project X that just came out. Y'all remember that movie?
Yes.
Big time party movie.
Yes.
And that school year, everybody was trying to recreate the next Project X party. This is the Project X party. So that evening, I remember there was this huge Project X party that was going to take place at James Creek. Y'all remember James Creek? So
I do not, but I'll go with it.
Yeah. So I just remember being like, yo, forget this. We lost to Texas. I'm pissed off. I ain't going nowhere. My roommate's trying to get me to go. All these folks, hey, yo, you got to come. You got to come. Nah, I'm a little upset right now. Anyway, I wake up the next day and you could not stop hearing about how great that party was. I'm talking about people filled the streets. People had their cars out on the street. Music was blasting. Yo, folks dancing on top of it was the best party apparently in the history of college period. And I'm like, I can't believe I missed that party just because I was in my feelings that day. But yeah, maybe Etienne will regret something like that, but you know, other than that, hopefully everything else is out of the system.
Yeah, I was one of the rare losses in the black orange black combo.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were wearing.
Well, I guess we'll see you back here in Stillwater on November 25th.
Yo, Project X times were wild, y'all. Project X
times were crazy. That sounds like a good college party.
Sounds like something Dez Bryant would come up with.
Project X. Instead of X. Funny enough, Dez was not a big party guy at all whenever he was at OSU. Just focused. I'm here for one reason, and then it's on to the next thing.
For the record, I'm not judging those who don't party. To each their own. I'm referring to the no coffee, no tea rules at BYU. That's the type of stuff that I am referring to.
Yeah. And you can't be like in the same rooms as co-eds past like 6 p.m. or something like that. Yeah, all kinds of crazy rules. But, you know, it works for them.
That would be tough. No caffeine would be – that's a commitment for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, I didn't do caffeine, so it's all right.
What?
I ain't mad about that one.
I'm Eve. I didn't take caffeine.
I should have went to BYU.
Well, you try staying out of rooms of co-eds past 6 p.m. then, Eve.
You know,
Eve, actually, they have that Y on their helmet. You could have really stood out with the Y.
Mm-hmm. Y for Eve. That would have been dope. You know what? Hey, shout out to BYU and their big old Y on their helmets. You know, I hope y'all win every game except the one in Stillwater.
And then I'll go to the Big 12 championship like I've predicted.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's right. You did say that. Never mind.
So we would have to play them back to back, right? Because you said it was the last game of the year.
Yep.
So we play them in Stillwater, then turn around and play them in Dallas.
Correct.
That'd be just crazy. Warp them twice.
Do what you got to do.
Give Caleb Etienne a real homecoming, a real taste of what he missed out on.
I know that we've lost a decent amount of guys to the transfer portal, but we've also gotten some good guys in. I think we had the second recruiting class, the second portal class, second ranked portal class in the Big 12. So it has not all been lost. But on the subject of new players and recruiting, there were some interesting tweets yesterday. I did a little digging, and about a week and a half ago, the Oklahoman released a story about Oklahoma State's recruiting budget. And I will be completely honest, it's never something that I've really thought about. Like, I know football has a budget, but I've never thought about how much money is spent on recruiting. Their budget is $474,000, which may seem like a lot to some. However, of the 52 public universities in Power Five football, they were the second lowest spending amount, and they spent only $455,689. 21 of the 52 schools spent less than $1 million. To compare, Georgia spent $4.5 million on recruiting last year. That's stupid.
No, I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. I mean, whenever you look at the cost of acquiring these recruits, you're talking about prospects coming on official visits, especially whenever they happen on game weekends with these increased travel and hotel rates. And then, you know, with the addition of the early signing periods for football, you know, NCAA had to go and they had to change certain rules for official visits to include months in the spring, and increasing the visits, increasing the amount of costs, all that stuff goes into play. But, you know, additional cash is not being spent on recruiting travel via private planes, chartered flights, specifically for assistant coaches. So before, it used to be like a head coach, I'm flying on a plane and an assistant would hop on. But nowadays, you're getting assistant coaches flying by themselves or in a larger group on a private jet, and they're going and going to a recruit's place, maybe going to Tampa, Jacksonville, and Miami all in one, you know, one little circuit, and then the head coach is meeting them somewhere else on a different plane. So like these type of things are happening. Of course, you got your charter flights. It's getting pretty ridiculous. But if you're able to win a national championship the way that Georgia has, I mean, it's all worth it. It completely just pays for itself. You just have to have the right, you know, the right boosters who are willing to come and put that money together. And that's just some
boost
of the
that
things.
Up.
Yeah, boost that up. That's just some of the things that these people are paying for. Like, I didn't even scratch the surface as to where, you know, some of this money goes when it comes to the production, when it comes to the mail that gets sent out to all these recruits on a regular basis, or coaches landing on a helicopter on the field just to make an impression on a five-star that they're really, really trying to get, that gets really expensive. That type of stuff is happening all over the Southeast for sure. But with a $475,000 budget, you ain't doing all that.
Imagine being like the top rated recruit. Obviously, like Landon is going to be in about 18 years. Just all the coaches coming in and with helicopters. And it's like, dude, this is like the 20th helicopter I've seen. I don't care at this point. You know, like, you're wasting your money. That's how I feel about it. Like, I kind of remember though, like, maybe that is super impressive to people, because didn't Gundy used to use a helicopter? I think that was like a thing for a while. Like, he probably, you know, was able to get in guys like Dez Bryant, Brandon Pettigrew, Zach Robinson. Maybe it's time to do that again. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, but it's kind of like, if you have the money, why wouldn't you spend it? You know, but at the same time, George is spending $4.5 million whenever you've already got like SEC championships, national championships. Like, is that not enough to entice people to come play for you? You have to go out and spend that much more money.
Yeah.
But hey, more power to him, I guess. What's crazy though is like a lot of people kind of cut off at the top 10. It's about everybody that you would expect to see there. But then right underneath that, at number 11 is Rutgers. And they're just a terrible outlier. You're spending top 15 in recruiting and you're not getting anything for it. Like, I kind of feel bad for him.
Hold on. What year was this that they spent that much? Like top 11?
This past year.
The average.
So
this
past year. So we don't know how it's going to work out.
Or it's the average. Is it the average over the last, 5 years?
Yeah, it goes back to 20. There's a chart on the Oklahoman in this story, and it has the top, it's Georgia, Clemson, A&M, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Texas, Alabama, Michigan, Oregon, Florida, Rutgers.
Wow. Yeah.
Rutgers spent more than Ohio State is kind of mind-blowing, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
What are y'all doing?
Well, that's pretty unbelievable. I ain't gonna lie. I would like to see what they spent that money on.
So yeah, what I'm saying though is like, if you're gonna be an outlier, be an outlier for a good reason, like Oklahoma State. So you're not spending as much and you're getting a lot more out of the players. You're getting more wins and you're not spending as much. That's all Holder, it sounds like. So maybe with Weiberg, we're gonna get to see the pendulum swing the other way a little bit. Maybe not up to, 2.5 million plus or whatever the case is, but I'm just excited about the potential to see where it goes if we're able to spend more money. Yeah. What that means as far as the caliber of athlete we can bring in, transfer portal as well, and then keeping the talent here. That's the main thing. So it doesn't matter if you spend all that money and then you get somebody here for 1 year, they're out the door the next year. I mean, we see it all the time with Texas A&M, Texas. I mean, they're spending all this money on guys and then they're not developing their players to be able to, count on them to be what they envision for the program. So,
yeah, I mean, being able to re-recruit those players every single year, throughout the year these days, it seems like, right, because of the other recruiting window that is not open in the NCAA. But I would say, like, to get the caliber of players that we do get for having such a relatively low budget, we're pretty fiscally responsible.
Yeah, it's impressive. It really is. Like, based on the numbers that we were seeing, it's kind of like, dude, you're – what was the number? Like, is this just Power 5, right?
Yeah.
So 51 teams or something?
51 public schools in – Power 5.
Public. Okay, yeah. Because private schools, they don't even have to disclose it. So Miami, yeah. TCU.
Notre Dame.
Those guys are spending. Yeah, Notre Dame.
USC. There's no telling.
So, Justin, to your point not too long ago about aren't the national championships and all those championships, are they not enough? Well, clearly they are not. Because over the last 12 seasons, Oklahoma State has consistently been in the top 15 winningest programs in college football, but they regularly fall to the 25 to 40 range of recruiting classes. Granted, these are not national championship seasons, but Georgia's not winning the national championship every year either. We've discussed it in earlier episodes. It's hard to make it to the playoff. It's hard to make it to the championship. So wouldn't you think the next best thing would be, wow, this is a really winning record. This is a team that usually gets 10 wins. They're averaging around 10 wins the last 10 years, scratch 2022. Clearly kids care about all the hoopla that goes with it. Because to me, I'm looking at a team also with their track record. I want to go to a program that's going to win. Rutgers, you're spending a lot of money, but you're not winning. So who really cares?
Well, we're also underestimating one other huge factor here, which is the NIL money, which I don't know if that's even included in this recruiting, which I don't think it is.
OSU's recruiting budget.
Yeah, yeah. So when you talk about, what are these kids, what are these families really making their decisions on? I mean, there's some significant life-changing money that's being thrown around out here as well.
But some of these, I mean, this goes back to 2017, and NIL launched in
2020.
So this, this goes back in 2017, Georgia spent almost 2.3 million. Clemson spent, and then Georgia was ahead by a lot. I just want to say that Georgia is consistently way above everybody, with the exception of 2021, because of, and this is the fiscal year also. So this is everyone's fiscal year. So in the 2021 fiscal year, that was also COVID. So everyone's budgets dropped significantly. But like in 2017, Georgia spent almost 2.3. The next closest school was Clemson, and they spent about 1.1 million. So
well, I thought Alabama would have been higher than that for some reason.
I have been mistaken. Alabama spent 1.5. So this is based on they're ranked as far as their averages. So in 2017, okay. Georgia was 2.3. Alabama was 1.5-ish. But I mean, Michigan was still above Alabama in 2017, by only like $20,000. But
yeah, and look at the schools we're talking about. We're talking about those schools that have been consistently in the college football playoffs. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's got to be a real correlation. So,
because of that, I mean, we're expanding to a 12-team playoff, but do you think that the NCAA could maybe enforce like a budget cap so that it's a little bit more fair across the board? Or do you think it's just going to be, you know, let Georgia spend $10 million?
I will say this new NCAA president, ever since, you know, Mark Emmert left, and I don't even know the new guy's name, to be honest with you. But he, I don't know anything about him. I don't know if he is more so on the, hey, I'm over here trying to govern. I'm over here trying to make sure that there's these enforcements trying to be strict. I don't know anything about him. But I can't imagine that the SEC or the ACC or even the Big 12 Conference would let that happen without a fight.
It's funny, Eve, you say govern, because Charlie Baker, the current NCAA president, is the former governor of Massachusetts.
There you go. Right. Them Northeasterners, like, I already don't trust him. I already immediately don't trust him because he's from the Northeast. So he don't understand what we all about. All right. Hey, Meg. Yes, I'm talking to you, Meg. I don't know about y'all folks over there.
So he's going to throw in the old budget cap. And I'm not saying it has to be like anything outlandish, but like if you cap it at 2 million, a lot of people aren't even spending that now. It's just saying like the teams at the very top, like, okay, settle it down, Georgia. Even it out a little bit.
Yeah, you know how every single conference kind of governs themselves individually. It really does make you wonder what the NCAA is doing, because there is no commissioner over college football. So until there comes a day when college football doesn't necessarily fall under the rules and regulations of the NCAA, I don't anticipate that happening. That budget, that hard cap, if you will, over recruiting.
And if boosters want to donate, what's stopping them? I guess that's what national championships get you. You get boosters who want to give back to the program and help see it succeed.
And just mega fans, right? I don't have any I never went to the university. I never did. I'm just a huge fan because I saw them in the playoffs in 2020. And because of that, now I want to give you $5 million. Like just random things like that. But hey, shout out to all those who are out there campaigning. It is not an easy task.
What really blew my mind in reading this article is, okay, Oklahoma and Texas are number one and two in the Big 12 in spending. That's going to be irrelevant in a couple months. Yeah. Like, go bye-bye. They spent $2.6 million and $2.4 million. No other school in the Big 12 spent more than a million. So I think they'll fit right in over in the SEC. But the next highest school, the third highest spender, was West Virginia. And they spent $971,000. So they were pushing a million. And then Iowa State, Kansas, and Kansas State all came in next in the $800,000 to $900,000 range. The fact that Kansas has a bigger recruiting budget than us, yet they have been the laughing stock of the Big 12 up until this past year, for the previous about 10 or so, if not more, is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the Rutgers thing, though. Like, you're spending that money and not seeing the results. And they could turn it around if they've got a very talented quarterback, and they've enticed a lot of people to check out Kansas based on the momentum they gained last year. They've got some new facilities that are being built, and all of that can play a factor into people wanting to go to Kansas.
But yeah, I mean, you also have to look at who were the quote unquote politicians at the helm during those periods. And by politicians, I'm talking about the head coach, like the head coach that is going to all these different booster meetings, that's doing the circuit, that's doing the fundraising. I mean, we all know it's no secret. Les Miles is one of the best people when it comes to gathering this money to be able to, you know, to get boosters to actually donate to the university. He did it at LSU. Shoot, he did it at Oklahoma State, and he was a head coach at Kansas during that period and being able to do that. That's why these head coaches get paid so much, because it's not just about the X's and O's, the Jimmys and Joes, but so much of it is about, hey, I'm going to be the president, essentially, and making sure that I'm campaigning properly and getting all these dollars in for these recruits.
Okay, so let's go with that, Eve.
Okay.
Gundy has been here for 19 years. Why does he not have better relationships with these boosters, and why is he not bringing in that money? You would think having a consistent head coach would bring in more money, right?
That is a whole nother story. Okay. That's, I think a lot of that had to do with the previous regime.
He's here 19 years.
Right, right.
Are you talking the Holder regime or?
Yeah, the Holder regime. I think that has to do with the Holder regime, which, look, I was pretty close to certain people within the athletic department during that whole time. And I heard a lot of stuff that I don't feel comfortable saying on a podcast, but I know that there was not great, there's kind of some bad blood there, right? Not great relationships and all that. And I think it has to do more so with certain people who donate being closer to one side than the other side. All I know is, I don't know if y'all can tell, but there seems to be a little re-energy. Like, there's more vigor, I feel like. I'm a little more pep in the step whenever the new athletic director and the new president came on board. I'll just leave it at that.
Fair.
Yeah, if everybody, yeah, anybody out there, if you can put the pieces together, all that, like, that's fine and dandy. But yeah, that's
And I mean, I get everything that you're saying. I just still think if a coach has been night, I mean, I am not raising money. Let me just start with that. But I've been at Oklahoma State 2.5 years, and I've cultivated a lot of relationships across campus and across departments, regardless of who the president was. I had a great relationship with Burns Hargis. I have a good relationship with Dr. Shrum. I have a great relationship with Darren Shrum. I'm saying this as I've been here 2.5 years, and I've made a lot of relationships with a lot of people at this university. And I don't care if there's bad blood between Holder and Gundy and whatever that is. If you should also be like, you should have the same common goal to want to raise money for your programs and your teams.
No, absolutely. And I don't think that there was ever any no desire to ever raise money for your programs and your teams. It was just a matter of, okay, which teams are we prioritizing here? You know, I think it's more so of like, hey, let's make sure that everybody is doing this and that versus, okay, let's make sure that football is actually getting to the level that we know that they can get at. And I think that's some of what we're seeing right now in the Pac-12 conference where, you know, Stanford, for example, what happened to Stanford football for like a solid 5-6 years? Stanford football was consistently in the top five, top 10. And all of a sudden they were really, really prioritizing all these Olympic sports, which I don't think there's anything wrong with prioritizing Olympic sports, all for Title IX and giving opportunities to all these other student athletes as well. With that being said, you gotta know like where to allocate your funds properly. And I don't think that some old school, traditionalist, not even traditionalist as much as it is, you know, just being a little stuck in the past, are they're less prone to actually put that money towards football.
Yeah, with the current president, athletic director, I think we've already seen that they're committed to Gundy with his salary and committed to football. We will see in the next several seasons as far as seeing that average number increase over time. I think that that's something to expect. And then from that, continue to win, be the leaders of the new Big 12. And with that success comes more money, and that cycle is just going to keep going. So
for sure.
But I will say, Meg, there is a big difference between making connections and then getting those connections to give you money.
Which is fair.
When you have to separate people from their wallets, that's a whole different thing. And I think it's also one thing making connection within the athletic department, within the university, within Stillwater, versus having to go down to, okay, now let's go down to Texas and talk to our biggest donor over there and, you know, talk to him about it. And then let's go to Oklahoma City, and then let's go to Wichita and try to separate all these guys from their wallets. That makes, you know, that's just a different story right there.
No, that's why I said I don't raise money. But my point was that Gundy has been here for 19 years.
Right.
You would think that he would have some of those connections where you could go to them and say, here is my plan. Because raising money is not, it's also not like, hey, I ran the New York Marathon in 2015 and I ran it for the V Foundation and I had to raise money to race. So I was emailing people, I was doing fundraisers in the community to be like, all of this money is going to the V Foundation, 100% of it. And
what was your time?
4:30.
No way. That's impressive.
Thank you. My goal was top goal was 4. I was like, okay, 4:15 would be great, but 4:30 is like, I need to get in that time.
Yeah.
In that time. So yeah. Nice. Want to run Boston. It's Boston Marathon week. Best day in Boston, Marathon Monday. I want to run it. But again, you got to raise money.
Yeah.
I'm never going to qualify. You got to be under like 3:30 or 3:20 for women. And that's just that's not going to happen. But I digress. I say this, like, I think raising money for a program, a football team, is also different because you're like, here's my plan. You know, it's not like, hey, do you want to buy some cookies to support the girls? It's like yes. You go in with a plan and be like, this is how we're going to use your money. It's more of like a business pitch. It's not, I mean, I watch a lot of Shark Tank. They have business plans. They ask for X amount of dollars for this percent. And while these boosters are not getting any like return on investment, the return on the investment.
Tax write-offs.
Okay. Tax write-offs. But, you know, they're not getting a percentage of the football program and the profits and everything, but tax write-offs and helping build this program. So I do think that if you have those relationships and separating people from wallets, yes, for sure. But these relationships are not, they're business. They're not personal. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think a lot of that does come back to like winning the Big 12 championship. Like, because if you win, you will get that money a lot easier. You know, it's easy to say you haven't won a Big 12 championship in 10, 11 years. And for that reason, I'm out. Okay. Shark Tank reference. So you just win, continue to win, and then the money will come. So.
Yeah. I mean, there's an art and a science to it. You have the business side, but then you also do have those personal relationships. Some of it is transactional, but gosh, so much of it is really like, hey, we're actual friends here. And as a friend, I need you to contribute to this $300 million raise that we have going on, right?
Yeah, okay. And if they're your friend, if my friend came to me with a business proposal and said, Meg, I need $25,000. I will like, and here is my proposal. And I thought it was legit. I would give them the money.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And, well, I mean, with that being said, so for what it's worth, donors have given us the money. It's just up to the actual people within the department to figure out how are we going to allocate the funds. And I think that's the biggest thing that I'm talking about here. It's not a matter of, hey, fundraising and getting the money. It's a matter of how are we prioritizing it once we have it.
But and I mean, are we getting 4 million? You know, we're not getting, my point, we're not getting the same amount of money as the Georgias, as the Alabamas, you know, Notre Dame's.
Yeah.
Or are we? I don't think we are.
I don't think we are. I mean,
that's my point.
They're better at it.
Right. Better. I mean, it's bigger fan bases,
bigger brands.
Yeah. Like, we're just up against it in that sense.
So. Like, yeah. I mean, even their recruiting staffs alone are like 20 people. How many do we have in our recruiting staffs? Like 9. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like it's, yeah, it's like comparing apples and oranges here.
Yeah. But, orange. Hey, go Pokes.
Go Pokes. Yeah. Hopefully. Hey, and apples.
Apples. Georgia, Alabama. Okay.
Yeah. Hopefully. Hey. Hopefully we get to, you know what? Here's the plan. All right. Well, as soon as I get $500 million, I'm just going to go ahead and get OK State to be able to compete with all these other teams.
Why wait until then? All right. My next paycheck is going to, no, I'm just kidding. All right.
Give Orange campaign just ended. I hope y'all gave.
You know what? I'm just going to tell Oklahoma State, I don't even need my next paycheck. You guys just keep it.
You basically.
You just keep it. I love it.
Need that.
We'll just have to see. I mean, I don't really know how that whole conversation got started with the budget, but I think Gundy's optimistic that not our discussion. I don't know why the recruiting budget article was released. What prompted that to be released by the Oklahoman, if there was a certain situation, but Gundy did address some stuff at spring ball, just about like how he's like, yeah, we would love more money, but we also know we need to use it wisely. So it'll be interesting to see if there's an increase in the budget for next year and if any boosters are listening and they want to donate.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting, right? Like, does it seem like, I don't know how Gundy is on the recruiting trail. I don't know how he is on a fundraising trail. Does it seem like he would love that part of it? Like, he'll get in front of a mic. He'll throw some jokes out there. But like, I'm just thinking about like Jimbo Fisher, for example. Have you guys ever heard Jimbo Fisher just speak on an interview? Like, that guy is a salesman. Like, my man will sell me to do anything. All right. I'm just like, how? Like, yeah, I don't. Like, there are some coaches that just, like, really embrace that part of the job, that part of the role. Whenever you see Nick Saban going to the local Mobile, Alabama, whatever club, and he's speaking to a group of 100 people, and he is just laying down bars after bars after bars. I'm just like, yo, this dude is ghostwriting for Drake right now. What does this do? Like, some people really love this part of the process, and I don't know what Gundy is like in that. I've never seen any leaks. I've never seen any footage. I've never been a part of any of those. So, I don't know what he's like.
I can't remember exactly. I feel like I went to, like, a cowboy caravan in Oklahoma City 1 year. And I think that was kind of what it was surrounded around. And I think he's pretty similar to other coaches in that aspect. So,
yeah.
Granted, that was like 2007. So,
but I mean, you see these viral clips from these other coaches that go because they're so freaking motivational. Like, every single year, it seems like it's like, you know, the same 5-6 coaches. And they also happen to be the same 5-6 coaches that are also in the top of the helm. So, I don't know, man. Maybe it has to do with getting a speechwriter, maybe, you know? Go ahead and get you a speechwriter. Whoever wrote Obama's speeches, get on it.
Add that to our list of needs at school.
Add a speechwriter.
Yeah.
Hey, we're coming up
with all kinds of demands. Don't worry about spending it on recruiting. We're going to get Obama's speechwriter in here.
You're
coming out like
recruiting?
Now look, let me be clear. Our recruiting budget is going to go up.
Yes, boy. We need it.
Well, guys, with that, I want to thank everybody for watching and or listening to this episode of the Believe in OK State podcast presented by Bet Online. We'll have a final score by the time this airs on Thursday. Again, we record on Tuesdays, release on Thursdays. I'm scrolling through right now. But last I looked, OSU was up on OU in Bedlam baseball, 11-5. So.
Nice.
Let's get it done, fellas. Let's get it done.
Yes, 11-5, top 7. So keep it going, guys. By the time
Oklahoma State had pitcher Cale Davis that transferred from OSU to OU. This is before the Trace Ford thing. So we're seeing that happen frequently now, and I don't like it. So I hope he's pitching tonight, and I hope he gets hammered.
Pistols firing, go baby. Pokes. Let's go.
Go Pokes. Well, yeah. Thank you for listening again. Appreciate you always. Like, share, subscribe, follow, comment, all the things. It's draft week next week. Dreams are going to come true.
Let's go, Jason Taylor. Second round, baby. Let's go. Second round, Jason Taylor. I'm rooting for it.
We'll do some draft predictions next week. So come back for that episode before the big night.
Nice.
Nothing left to say, but go Pokes.
Go Pokes.
Go Pokes.